Jason Burmis has the power of information.
Today's News Talk.
TNT.
Artificial intelligence is very much a reflection of its programmer and what is programming it. Much like social media and its feeds is much a reflection of that user. And, you know, in these last couple segments, it just reminds me so much of how people think that somehow team baseball is going to fix the issue. I assure you that AI is going nowhere. And I'm sorry, I do not trust individuals on either side of the political spectrum to ensure that I'm getting the best AI or the truth via AI. And that's why regulation on this is so dangerous, because we've already seen what the powers that shouldn't be are doing with social media. Again, in the last segment, I alluded to the very real fact that if you're not on a platform like Google, you're essentially not in the game. Now, a lot of people say, well, you could have a brick and mortar store. Yeah, and I can also go outside of that brick and mortar store, get up on a plastic crate with a sign and scream all day long. I can be the newspaper boy and hand out flyers. And people have done that. But I could do that all day in lower Manhattan. Let's do a social experiment. Max. I would reach a few hundred to 1,000 people. Now, in a fraction of that time, even by a paid boost, which they offer, and when I say they, Google, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they all let you promote via money. I can put up a post, 15 minutes, well thought out, nice graphics, and I could hit the pay button, and if it were fair, I will reach 10,000 people for $10 in less than a half an hour. But no, not if they don't like your politics. And you know, there's one guy out there that I will say did try to bring this up as an issue. And I'm not sure where his litigation is or if he was able to get some kind of a settlement and then just not be able to talk about it via some kind of NDAA, which happens a lot. NDAA, by the way, non-disclosure agreement. I didn't mean NDAA as in the terrible legislation that we should never have. Where he sued Facebook because clearly Cernovich, Mike Cernovich, was not getting the same kind of results as somebody who had different politics. Well, now just all those people have been banned. And all you need to understand that is the fact that the WorldNet dailies of the world no longer have the reach that they once had. The gateway pundits of the world only have a fraction of the reach that they once did. And that was an extremely real, and I mean real, argument. Go type in Biden in the same place that you type in Trump over at X, you know, the free speech platform. You'll see plenty of pro-Biden posts. And when I'll guarantee you, because Biden went outside today and he was with AOC and Bernie, there's a ton of Biden right there speaking. Go type in Trump. You know how long? I mean, literally, you got to scroll down just to see the guy talk. There are clear algorithmic problems with your quote unquote free speech platform. And with the inability to sue, 203 still in there, and then the collusion between the government and these organizations, we only have what? An expansion of techno-fascism in a post-truth world where they want to regulate the very tools that what? Could empower humanity, but they want to utilize it to enslave us. Well, I'd like you to empower yourself by going to fancy a bank holiday weekend at a music festival for Truth and Freedom Tribes with 30 awake artists, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop, and all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncy castles, and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth of the world. A Stand in the Park and Light Paper presents Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th. You get 4 days of camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus booking fee. Children under 5 come free. There is no better bargain anywhere. Visit our website now and make sure you don't miss what's going on to be a brilliant weekend for the whole Freedom family. StandInTheLight.uk. We will see you there, and we will see you on the flip side of this break with more TNT and Adam Ruckus.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
An Australian court has demanded that Elon Musk's ex-social media platform prevent people from seeing violent footage related to a recent church stabbing in Sydney by blocking the content, not just for Australian audiences, but for every single user on the platform worldwide. Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. So we're just going to censor the news now, huh?
Well, don't worry. Mr. Free Speech Absolutist is there to save the world, Jason. Elon Musk's social media platform X, I think we can finally stop saying formerly known as Twitter. We all get it now. It is clashing with not only Brazil, but now Australia. In this case, Australia's online safety watchdog over a directive, an order, a demand to remove content which is connected to this alleged, how can you describe it as an alleged church stabbing in Sydney? Everyone can see with their own eyes what took place. Anyway, the incident, in case you missed it, where a bishop was attacked during a live streamed worship service has raised concerns about censorship and freedom of speech. The pro-censorship e-safety commissioner, one Julie Inman Grant, issued notices to both X and Meta, the parent company of Facebook, requesting the removal of some posts about the violent attack. In response, Musk's platform has indicated its intent to resist these orders, citing a commitment to free speech, because that's what he's about, right? On Friday, Musk highlighted, he posted on X something, he highlighted his disapproval of what he termed, quote unquote, global content bans enforced by Australia's censorship authorities. Well, despite the threat of fines for non-compliance, X's legal team maintains that the flagged posts do not violate the platform's policies on violent content. X released a statement shared by Mr. Musk, criticizing the order and describing the attack as a, quote, horrific assault on free society, end quote. The platform stated that it complied with the directive while challenging it legally, emphasizing that the eSafety Commission's scope should be limited to Australian jurisdiction. Yeah. According to X, demands for global takedowns represent a bit of an overreach of authority that undermines the principles of a free and open internet. I can't argue with that. The platform pointed out that while it does not allow content praising violence or inciting further attacks, there is an ongoing public discourse about this particular event. They argue that attempts to suppress global conversations set a dangerous precedent with broader implications for free speech. Local authorities and politicians have taken a different stance, and New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb, for instance, urged social media platforms to do more to prevent the spread of violent content, criticizing platforms for leaving harmful images online. Similarly, NSW Premier Chris Minns called for stricter penalties for social media companies that fail to act promptly on harmful content. Despite these concerns, X's position reflects Musk's broader commitment to preserving freedom of speech on social media platforms. Mm-hmm. At least that's how it's being reported. Let's go to Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who told reporters, he's a lovely man, by the way, quote, by and large, people responded appropriately to the calls by the eSafety Commissioner. X chose not to. They stand, I think. I find it extraordinary that X chose not to comply and trying to argue their case, end quote. Albanese insinuated that the video evidence of the attack on a Christian cleric amounted to, I hope you're sitting down for this, misinformation. That's right. The actual live video of what really occurred is misinformation, according to Australia's prime minister. Oh boy, this guy. He went on to say, quote, "We know, I think overwhelmingly, Australians want misinformation and disinformation to stop. This isn't about freedom of expression. This is about the dangerous implications that can occur when things that are simply not true, that everyone knows is not true, are replicated and weaponized in order to cause division, and in this case, to promote negative statements and potentially to just inflame what was a very difficult situation." He adds, "Social media has a social responsibility," end quote. Wow. So there you have it, Jason. What do you think about this one?
First of all, the idea that we are going to start censoring videos of significance. Okay. Now, look, if you want to take it off a certain site, because again, you do have a policy against violence. In other words, I can't go on Facebook and watch hardcore pornography like you can on Twitter, right? I get that. That would be taken off. I can't go on Facebook and see what's going on in Palestine or the Middle East, etc. I get that. X or other websites clearly have news values. And then I look at other websites that aren't quote unquote platforms. And that's also a slippery slope, right? You're only a platform if you have so much. If you're just a website, like I remember the days of E-bombs world. Before social media, if I wanted to see the Tupac autopsy photos, okay, there were certain websites you could go to. E-bombs world would link to those type of sites. Now, there were other things on there that were completely abhorrent and things that I would not want to take part in, but news feeds, things of significance, yes. That's not being advocated. So in other words, Australia seems to be okay with, again, dead Palestinian kids in your feed, or busloads of Ukrainian teenagers being put off to their death, and then videos of those bombings. That's fine, but not a stabbing. And remember, Australia has very stringent gun rules. So I could see why they wouldn't want people to understand that, hey, you're not really going to be able to defend yourself against Stabby McGee if you don't have a gun. and making that thing. So there, one day they might just be able to say, hey, there were no stabbings this year. There were 146 in Australia, right? How would you know the difference? You're not allowed to report on them. This is the evolution of the post-truth world. For a leader of a nation state to sit out there and decry a platform for not taking down a newsworthy event is extremely troublesome. And quite frankly, since you look at Google, and you could argue they're a platform, well, obviously, it's going to be banned in the search engines for the most part as well. We've already seen that. Guys, it's not Chinese-style censorship. I'll often be looking for things, even on X. I'll go into Google, and I'll type the little dicka-dicka-doo. First page, nothing. Second page, nothing. Third, fourth. I'll go to DuckDuckGo. Second result. That's where we're at. So we do need more choice, more challenges. And look, I don't like the fact that this kind of erects Elon Musk as some kind of like purveyor of free speech, because again, I don't think he is. But allowing these things to continue, I mean, I don't know how we're going to tell reality in the next couple of years online with all these tools and this authoritarianism that we're not just seeing in Australia, but here in the United States and other Western countries as well. We're in very dangerous times, Adam.
Yeah, well, luckily, Jason, we have trusted authorities and trusted sources who are going to tell us what to believe for ourselves, even though, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, no, Elon Musk, I think he's just taking advantage of this. I wonder, though, Jason, did he choose to make a big deal about stuff like this with Australia, as well as the other issue with Brazil that he's fighting over there, to make himself look good? Or is it because he has to, because these are such huge, you know, everybody knows about these, you know, if he decided to just, you know, go along to get along with these governments and these censorship regimes across the planet, would the rest of the world even notice or care? Or is he, you know, he's making it a big deal, so he looks like the hero? Or is it because he has no choice? I'm curious what you think about that.
I mean, again, I think it's a facade. I think you're very right that these issues are so big that they're propping up a leader, because again, this guy is responsible not only for the Starlink network, the artificial skin we're now putting around the planet, but SpaceX, which is launching that artificial skin, along with the Blackjack DARPA program, the spy satellites. And now, in the last couple of months, I believe it was the middle of March, it has been announced that he's actually openly working on the spy satellite network for the United States. Hey, freedom of speech is great as long as they can surveil all of our free speech, right? Then it's A-OK as long as it's going into a server somewhere run by some demonic AI for somebody that believes in Alice Bailey and the Lucius Trust. I know it's all coming together on the show, but the reality is these things are really happening. And again, they're propping up a guy that dressed up like Satan's champion for Halloween, and that's his profile picture on X. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more Elon Musk. Hopefully, we're going to be shedding a lot of light on the darkness that actually surrounds Musk's activities. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT Radio after this.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
All the focus of the West, of Washington and its allies, are all focused on Israel right now, to support and help Israel and to somehow contain and deter Iran. Okay. So that means that Russia kind of has an open field with regards to what it wants to do. So think about that for a moment. Could we have a situation in this new world, this multipolar world, where the Iranians and the Russians, their allies, and certainly Russia's not going to slap Iran on the wrist for this latest salvo against Israel. Why? Because it absolutely ties up the United States and its allies right now in the Middle East.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are back. We are joined by Karen Hunt. She's an author, illustrator, and prolific blogger, and somebody that's not buying into the hype of the Musker nuts. Now, I do a show, and I get a lot of these conservatives on there, and everybody's talking about Elon Musk and free speech on X, but I like to look at somebody's actions, and number one, I don't think that X, although the best kid in a bad neighborhood, is a free speech platform, and everything that this guy seems to be behind and does is also in line with Klaus Nutschwab and the WEF agenda. You know, he's on the carbon credit train. He's into the automation, the AI, the humanoid robots, all these different things. So what are your thoughts on Elon Musk?
All right, let's get right into it. I'm very happy to be here. Nice. Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, so Elon Musk, it's always exciting because I love TNT Radio. I never know what we're going to talk about, but I'm pretty much prepared for anything because I love to write on so many different topics. But Elon Musk is a big one for me. I've been writing about him for, goodness, about 2 years now. And I have not bought into his free speech. First of all, I write on Substack, and we are heavily censored on X. So that's one thing. And the other thing, I mean, there's so many things about it. First of all, Elon Musk wants to put, he wants to connect you directly to the vast machine. I like to call it the vast machine, which is from Jonathan Twelvehawk's book, The Traveler. That's the term that I like to use. So he wants to connect us all to the vast machine. And, you know, I personally don't want to have a hole drilled in my head, and I don't want to have something stuck in my brain where I will no longer know whether it's me or it's the machine. He's made it very clear. He has said, and I could quote him, that we are already part cyborg. He has said these things. He has said that he wants to make X into you know, essentially into WeChat. So I have a lot of problems with Elon Musk. That's just for starters.
So let's start with the human brain interfaces, or the BCIs, brain computer interfaces. Mm-hmm. Now, they've sold this idea that you're going to go to a mall and they're going to have this robotic kiosk. It's going to give you brain surgery in and out. And then all of a sudden, you're going to be able to listen to Taylor Swift in your head and connect to all these cool things. But that seems to, luckily, at least be a ways off. We are now having the first FDA human trial on this technology. But brain-computer interfaces are not new. They've been developed in our Defense Advanced Research Project Agency for many, many years now. BlackRock Neurotech also mm-hmm. exists as a quote-unquote competitor. That should let you know everything you need to know that they're the competitor. I mean, do you guys like BlackRock? And then he's also involved in all of these other tech companies. You know, to me, when I look at this guy, he seems to be a cutout and very much a PR frontman. Like when we had Apple, you know, we were talking computers and then it became the iDevice and maybe some peripherals, but Steve Jobs wasn't the head of 30 other companies. Even Bill Gates, before he left Microsoft, it was basically home computers into Xbox and then Windows. With Elon Musk, you've literally got the boring company. In other words, it's not just a flamethrower company. You're digging tunnels and holes, mostly for the military-industrial complex. You have X, obviously, which he bought up. You have SpaceX, which is launching Starlink, which is another one of his products. Then you have Tesla, and it's not just a car company. It's very much behind the sustainability agenda. It's very much pushing robotics and automation. It has the Optimus bot on top of it. Tesla also partnered with CureVac to build the micro nano factories that printed up the hate and lie shots. I mean, that's a lot to be. And, you know, he's got time to tweet all day and do 26 interviews a week. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you really think this guy is running all these companies?
No. How could he? I mean, unless he actually has already figured out to create, you know, 20 clones of himself and he's not telling us something. No, I mean, absolutely not. I don't even know if he's actually tweeting all of this stuff. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I mean, he is, I absolutely agree with you. He's a front man because there are so many other companies that are doing the same thing and, in fact, are further along. You know, there's Synchron. As you say, BlackRock is doing the same thing. So there's many different companies. And of course, this all goes, you know, all roads lead to transhumanism, or shall we say posthumanism. So we have basically become, in one way or another, the entire human race, we're just in a giant petri dish, essentially, to be sort of experimented on by these different billionaires. And they're all kind of in a little race with one another. Even, you know, I mean, all we ever hear about are these billionaires, Elon Musk, the other ones, you know, who's bought the biggest yacht, who's done this, who's done that. And, you know, Elon Musk, I think he has actually in the last 2 years lost more money than anyone in history. He's lost something like $200 billion and it's going down. I mean, you could essentially say, who cares if you lose, you know, if you have 300 billion or 200 billion. But if you know, you think about all of these things, he's rather reckless as it goes. But as you say, he's got all these different companies and he really wants to control. He has said that he wants no dark spaces on the earth. So he wants his satellites controlling every single corner of this planet. You will not be able to see a star in the sky. He wants to beam advertisements down from space. He wants everyone connected to his Starlink. I mean, you know, I find it quite incredible how he's been able to capture the conservative market, essentially. And I think that was his job. He took over Twitter. He turned it into X, which is a whole other weird, crazy thing. He even names his children X. and then he really captured the conservatives, and you really, they're just completely in his corner. And it's really interesting. He made X into, you know, the thing about AI, it needs to eat. We are feeding AI with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our hopes, our dreams, our desires. Everything that we put into X, in everything that is tweeted or however you want to call it now, is being fed into his machines. And that's
it's
why
it's a large data mining operation.
Exactly.
Large language models that people don't really understand. And like you said, it's not even in beta right now. It's in alpha because he does want to make it into the quote unquote everything app. We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to continue on this path of not only Starlink communications, but transhumanism and what that means. More TNT after the headlines.
TNT Radio News.
We are your station for news. News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Former President Donald Trump and New York Attorney General Letitia James reached a settlement on April 22nd regarding the $175 million bond required in his New York civil case. The recently approved $61 billion U.S. aid package for Ukraine is viewed as insufficient to decisively alter the course of the conflict with Russia. Despite strengthening Ukraine's resistance, according to officials in Kiev and military analysts, as reported by the Financial Times.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
We are talking Elon Musk and transhumanism. And earlier you alluded to the fact that Musk on multiple occasions has said we're already cyborgs. And, you know, he's not just talking about those that may have pacemakers or cochlear implants, etc., that you could argue, yes, there are people that are benefiting from this technology, empowering human beings. But essentially, that these in my watch are extensions electronically and create a cyborg. No, this is non-invasive technology, and I can remove it if I like. What we're talking about is very invasive. And especially when we talk about transhumanism, I do go to the COVID 1984 nightmare because, again, we were told time and time again that mRNA was not gene therapy. And that's exactly what it was defined as before it was a vaccination. And this, at its base level, is transhumanist technology. And this, again, was worked on via our Defense Department, DARPA in particular. It partners with Moderna all the way back in 2013. It builds this strategic mRNA collaboration. And as I said, Musk helped print these up. Now, Tesla itself has been heavily subsidized by the government. You also talked about the fact he can lose $200 million or $200 billion. Who cares? Yeah, it's because Tesla doesn't have to be profitable because there have been EVs on the market. This is obviously the chosen company. It goes with the humanoid robot Optimus. We don't need humanoid robots. That's to acclimate us to this technology and to humanize AI and robotics. So at every turn, he is on this transhumanist push, even aside from the fact that he openly wants to take you and your brain and hook it into this Starlink arena. And, you know, I mentioned before, you know, Starlink isn't the only thing he's launching. Again, DARPA, he's launched the Blackjack spy satellites with that on right. SpaceX. And I don't know if you saw it, but last month it was announced that he has now been commissioned, again, by the military-industrial complex, the one that hates him so much, to build their spy satellite system. I mean, this stuff should be out in the open. Yet you're hearing none of it in the quote unquote conservative media or much of the alternative media. This is the guy building the spy network for the US government. What don't they understand, Karen?
They don't. What everybody is so caught up in is that they now have free speech. Everybody has, because of Elon Musk, everybody can speak freely now. We're free. After COVID, that all that lockdown, all that restraint that was Twitter, and then suddenly now we have this freedom, and people think that they are free. But what has happened is everybody's been put in their little boxes, and everybody's sort of regurgitating the same information to one another. Everybody's been very much put into a lane. And so this is one thing that I take great exception to. But, for example, when I tried to say to some people, and I don't care, you know, get the blue check, whatever, I draw the line at getting that blue check, you know, paying for that blue check, because that's proving that you are human. If for AI, it has to have human data. If it takes synthetic data after about five times, it starts going mad. It starts going crazy. And they actually call it MAD. It stands for some MAD. And so it needs real people. And this is this obsession with proving how many ways can we prove that we are human? We, instead of machines having to prove that they are human, we are having to prove instead of AI having to prove that they are not human, we are having to prove that we are human to AI. How weird is that?
Let me talk about that for a second, because look, yeah. I had to buy the damn blue check mark.
And it wasn't
because I had a blue check mark before.
I get it.
No, because let me just say this. I think that we have to utilize the tools that are in the arena, just like I still have a YouTube channel. It's been demonetized. I had it taken five times, fought for it all the time. But the limitations of you not having the blue check mark, I can't live stream. I can't put my show on there because they limit you to 221. I will not monetize it and promote it as a subscription service as a protest. But speaking to your point of having to validate your humanity through electronics, let's talk about OpenAI for a second, because again, that was supposedly a Musk project, Sam Altman involved in that. Altman launched about 6 months ago, maybe a little longer, WorldCoin. And if you're not familiar, you look like you are familiar with WorldCoin.
I've written about all of these things, so I wrote a whole essay about WorldCoin.
For those that don't understand what WorldCoin is, it is a universal basic income token kind of beta test that verifies your humanity through a steampunk crystal ball device that harnesses your soul.
So bizarre.
I mean, your biometric information. And then essentially you're given one token every month, and where you utilize it to verify that you're human on digital platforms, you may in turn also get a little bit more. Now, every time it is utilized, the person that harnesses your biometrics, AKA soul, they also get some of this token. So again, whether this becomes the universal basic income, it is very much a beta test, and it is very much along those lines of what the merging and the blurring, I think, not verification of you being a human, but the blurring of the line between technology and
humanity.
That's
exactly
correct?
What it is. And actually, if you don't, I don't know if you know, but Vitalik Buterin, who created Ethereum, he is very obsessed with this as well. In fact, he calls his, when you're talking about souls, soul-bound tokens. And he wants, again, it's, you know, I did another whole essay, very, very fascinated with him about his whole philosophy and why he's doing what he's doing. But as you see, all of these things are pushing in the same direction. And they're all kind of vying for one another to see which one will, you know, be the one that will come out on top. You know, we have the whole thing. I mean, you could get into Bitcoin, you know, from there is Satoshi Nakamoto. I mean, this whole sort of,
come on, there's no Satoshi. Give me a break.
I know, but this is what I'm saying. They created this whole mystical presence, you know, and that people, it's like a whole other religion, basically. People buy into it. So all of these things are pushing people towards, you know, to sort of kind of think about this thing where they can go into this other realm. You know, you've got Oh, no, I can't think of it. The incredible thing that OpenAI has just done. Sora.
Sora, the video to text, or text to video.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at that, I wrote about that. You know, that pulls you into this world. You know, you're being really, you can watch it and it's almost like a hypnosis. You're being hypnotized to be taken into this world. So there's so many ways that we are being sort of melded with these machines. And not that we're all going to go into this wonderful new utopia. No, we are all being used, as I said, in a giant petri dish so that the few chosen can go into this utopia. So, I mean, I don't think
let me say this. At the end of the day, there's a lot of things that are transhumanism, but I think it comes down to two sects. You get the ones that actually believe that they can biologically live forever through technology and experimenting on the rest of us. And then the other end is to convince the serf class, us, that we can upload our consciousness into some kind of metaverse, if you will, and we actually are just euthanizing ourselves. That's my opinion, Karen. This has been an amazing conversation. We're going to have to do it again. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about World War I and the parallels that we're seeing right now with Jason Hodge. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
If you've been watching me for a while, you know that I'm a big history buff, and Late Nights used to be the History Channel before it became the Aliens Are Everything Network. Now I watch a lot of AHC, and recently I've been watching a lot of the old school videos on not only World War II, but World War I, and I've seen a ton of parallels out there. To talk about that is Jason Hodge. He is the odd man out of the Oddcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, when I watch these, you know, World War I archives, I see that a lot of smaller conflicts eventually bubble over into this very global conflict. And, you know, right now with the state of the world, what's going on in the Middle East, obviously Ukraine, Russia, I see, you know, us being one event away from a powder keg and the possibility of that happening again. So, what do you think are some of the most stark parallels between the time period just before World War I and what we're seeing right now?
Yeah, thank you, Jason, for having me. Well, you know, I really am interested in propaganda and kind of how the techniques are used on the public. And I revisited the series of The Century of Self, I think it was like 2002 that it was done. But
Edward Bernays in the house, my friend.
yes, absolutely. And anyone that hasn't seen that, I highly recommend you check it out. But, you know, it just reminded me so much of a lot of the things that are happening now. And there's so many more opportunities now with technology for the public to be propagandized. And so, you know, they basically came up with a campaign, you know, before World War I, or it actually was ongoing, but America hadn't gotten into it. And it was a mass propaganda campaign to use all forms of media. And so I think that we're seeing that. When I look at social media, I see a lot of things that are very emotionally driven and not provable. And I feel that it's really kind of pushing people to possibly go along with whatever is coming in the future. And I certainly hope that there's no World War III, but I can't help but feel like the propaganda has ramped up in the last few months. And I think that it's really driving people to be emotional. And we're in this huge election season and people are kind of unhinged the closer it gets to a big election anyway. So I think that there's kind of the opportunity there for something major. And I hope that I'm totally wrong, but you know, it seems that it's going that way to me.
First of all, let's start with Edward Bernays, because you mentioned the Century of Self. For those that are not aware, this is the guy who is the godfather of not only modern day propaganda, as he wrote the book on it and created the term, but also what would become known as public relations. And in that four-part documentary series, you really see him as an old man open up to how he was able to manipulate large swaths of the Western world. Now, as far as talking World War I and where we are right now, one of the main differences, the stark differences that I see this time around is when you do look at the First World War into the Second, the United States becomes more of a global power in each of those conflicts. So even after World War I, we're not the big daddies on the block. That's World War II. And prior to World War I, what a lot of people don't understand is we didn't get involved for at least a couple of years because the general populace was very against war. And I believe we got involved, correct me if I'm wrong, in 1916, and had been really moving since 1914. And it was really shortly after the U.S. involvement that it did come to a resolution. And ultimately, that resolution led to the League of Nations. Now, even after that war, the United States populace had not been propagandized enough that they wanted to join the League of Nations, and ultimately the League of Nations would fail, but make many of the same promises that the UN would promise after World War II is the end to global warfare. We obviously haven't seen that. So what are your thoughts on that? Because now we are the leaders. So in other words, I don't think that World War III can kick off without us being a part of it from the get-go. It can't be 2 years in waiting. Maybe there's some historical reverence there. I mean, quite frankly, we've already been in a two-year proxy war with really the other global military power that's outside of the NATO alliance that we see, correct?
I believe so. Yes, absolutely. That's a great point. I think that America has to be the one to initiate it, you know, as far as we're going to go into war. And that would be a huge deal. But we're kind of always in these smaller wars or giving aid to these other countries like Israel or Ukraine, like you just mentioned. And I think that, you know, it's different in that aspect. But I think the propaganda aspect is kind of the same as far as kind of nudging the people into being okay with their involvement in a war. And, you know, as far as the League of Nations goes, yes, that was like their shot at globalism, you know, at world government. It is all these people are saying that that's just a conspiracy. That's what that was, obviously. And as soon as that wasn't able to come to fruition, they started planning the United Nations, as you know. And now I think we have, of course, the United Nations is still there, but I kind of think that the World Economic Forum has kind of taken some of the power away, and they're kind of moving it towards a more of a business-minded model, with a lot of these large companies being a part of WEF. And but I think it's still there. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out, because, you know, some people think that Vladimir Putin is against this kind of globalism, but then other people are like, well, you know, he was part of UN Agenda 21 in 2030, and he was a part of WEF, and so is he really against all those things? And it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this plays out.
So I'd have to agree with you. Whose New World Order is it, right? Like, because I don't necessarily, you know, believe that Poot is fighting the evil globalist. I think that he has his alliances. There are different factions to this. But when you brought up the United Nations and the World Economic Forum, this is kind of how I see it. I was told for years when I talked about the United Nations, they're a paper tiger. They don't mean anything. They really could never affect us. Then the COVID 1984 nightmare hit. And every recommendation was coming down from the United Nations and the World Health Organization in conjunction with kind of this techno-fascistic clique you were talking about, the Davos crew. Now, the Davos crew has really been the mouthpiece for, I would say, modern fascism under the guise of equitable outcomes and caring for the planet, et cetera, taking reins of the corporations, what they're calling stakeholder capitalism. And I think that they just pushed it so far and have now become the face of this. And most people don't want to come to the realization that the United Nations is dangerous, that we should be out of the UN fully, because they've grown up thinking, oh, this is our last best hope for peace. And, you know, it's in the middle of New York City. I want the US out of the UN, the UN out of the US, make that thing into a museum for all of its war crimes that it's committed. I mean, that's what it needs to be. That's a pipe dream, right? I don't think it's going anywhere. But, you know, one of the things that Trump did was try to move us away, get us out of, you know, the Paris Climate Accords. He said he was going to get us out of the WHO, but still very much intertwining with these organizations, speaking at the World Economic Forum in 2020, etc. So, what are your thoughts coming up? I mean, obviously, this is the weirdest election year in our lifetimes. Is there any difference if a Trump gets in? Will he start to exorcise us from these organizations? And if so, will that make a difference in the larger scale of things?
Yeah, great question. You know, with Trump, it's kind of, I've kind of come to the terms of he's different, but I don't necessarily think that he is. You know, he says himself he's not a conservative. He's a man of common sense. And, you know, one person's common sense might not be our common sense. But, you know, I look at him like I try to study his administration. And I realize he had, 42 Council on Foreign Relations members appointed, 30-some-odd George W. Bush members, 2 Skull and Bones members, you know, Citibank, Blackstone, Rhodes Scholar was the guy, Rob Porter, who handed him his papers across his desk. So I feel like we were getting a lot of great rhetoric and a lot of promises and a lot of hope. But in the background, it seemed like this a lot of the same old swamp. So I feel like he might get us out of some of the things, but I just don't think it could be enough, you know, because I just saw over the weekend that I believe, or maybe a couple of days ago, that he was advocating for the money for Ukraine. You know, he said, we'll say we'll pay it back, but they don't have to pay it back, you know. So I feel like, I don't know, it's almost like the same old thing with a different flavor. And I'd love to believe that we have somebody out there looking out for us, but unfortunately, I kind of feel like it's up to us to do it with our dollar and you know, to kind of live it, you know.
So then let's talk about the possibility of a powder keg moment. You had the terror attacks over in the mall in Russia. Those guys seem to be low level, you know, money, you know, needing money, patsies. Right. Obviously blamed on ISIS. You had Putin come out and say, well, maybe Ukraine, maybe U.S. intelligence also involved. If we had an event like that in the United States and it was blamed on Russia or Iran, et cetera, would that be enough? Or would we need an event, something that tops 9/11? Like, would we need a semi-nuclear event? Maybe not in this country, but if it happened in Canada or Europe, would that be the moment that, yes, the world changes forever and we are in World War III?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a difference between Iran and Russia. This is just my opinion. I think that people might be a little more apprehensive to go to war with Russia because they're a bigger country and, you know, they have this reputation of being the great, you know, bear and everything like that. But I feel like there is so much leftover animosity towards frankly, towards the Middle East, Middle Eastern countries, Arab and Muslim countries. And even though I know Iran is part Persian, I feel like that would be a catalyst. I feel like if Iran did it or something happened that was blamed on Iran, I feel like that would push us more towards World War III than even something blamed on Russia, because I think it would be a little harder for people to believe that Russia was behind it, but that's just me. I don't know.
What if we get Joe Biden again? I mean, obviously the guy is not real. I mean, he's running for president. He's not running a campaign. Today should have been, for instance, if he was running a campaign, it was Earth Day today. He had Bernie Sanders and AOC next to him, superstars of the Democratic Party. He should have been, you know, at a public park in front of thousands of people. It was a handful of selected media and some handshakes out there. The guy's obviously not running anything. Even when Democrats are now asked about that administration, they kind of have to circumvent the fact that there's a dementia patient not running anything and there's no Dick Cheney behind him. Kamala Harris isn't running anything. This is essentially being run by committee and the administration. And then you can theorize beyond that. People say, oh, Biden, obviously. I just know it's not Joe. People say Larry Fink, BlackRock, et cetera. What are your thoughts on another 4 years of this regime? Or are they just going to somehow, some way, find the moment, install a Michelle Obama, a gruesome Newsom, and then it's 20 times worse? I don't know.
I mean, it's terrifying to think about. I think that it really solidifies a lot of the things that the conspiracy world and truther world have been saying for a long time. These presidents are not in charge, or at least they're not the main power behind these administrations. And I think that's why they fill these guys, you know, they fill these administrations with the Council on Foreign Relations members and other members of the Aspen Institute and whatnot. And of course, every administration has your Citibank, your bankers and whatnot. It's a terrifying thought. I don't see Joe lasting. How could he last much longer? He's so frail and it's just terrifying to think of Kamala Harris being the president. And of course, Gavin Newsom, any of those people. I think that if that happened, especially with somebody like Gavin Newsom, he is so hateable. I think there'd be mutiny in the streets. I really do. And of course, that's probably wouldn't turn out good for the American people, but something's got to give at some point. And maybe that's what they would want. Maybe they would want the elites behind the powers behind policy. Maybe they would want to push the people to revolt so they could do more lockdowns and make, you know, make more laws and things like that. But either way we go, it's kind of dark. I hate to be
they've certainly really inverted what was supposed to be a homeland, a Deutschland security apparatus that was supposed to be going after the Middle Eastern terrorists. It's now been fully inverted to domestic terrorism. Yeah, they've got the white supremacy cries, but hey, if you're a black nationalist, aka anybody against the narrative, they're coming for you too. January 6th was clearly provocateur. That wasn't an insurrection. That's the language there as well. And really, over the last decade plus, we have seen this push of a narrative that somehow, some way, civil war could break out in this country, with the number one movie right now being Civil War by a filmmaker. Hey, I actually like, I love 28 Days Later, and the guy's a really talented guy. Everybody's telling me it shot really well. I don't think that turns out great for the American people either, because it's not a real civil war. It's not like what we had in the 1860s, where the military had the same arms as the general populace. We're in a very, very different arena. And if you did have any kind of combat breaking out between neighbors, that would be the ultimate reason to come down heavy-handed with a martial law type situation that would make, the COVID-1984 nightmare seem like a Hawaii vacation, correct?
Yes, I believe so. I totally believe so. And it would be pockets of fighting and resistance here and there, and other people just cowering, and a lot of people wouldn't dare fight anybody. So it's hard to tell, but we hope that it doesn't come to that. And we hope that, they don't push us into those type of things, obviously.
What would you like to leave the audience with, and where can they check your stuff out?
Thank you. Well, you know, I've not given up all hope, and I seem kind of dark sometimes in my comments, but I do believe there's hope out there, and I think it's up to us mainly, like I said before, is vote with our dollars, really pay attention to the companies we give our money to. I think that's one of the strongest powers that we have as citizens now. And, you know, just, you know, stay healthy spiritually, mentally, physically. And with that, you can find me at _theoddmanout on Twitter or Instagram. And you can see in the profile the link to my show, which is just called The Odd Man Out.
Well, I think the bottom line is we cannot look to others. You know, even if Trump is some kind of a rogue, the bottom line is we have to look in the mirror, be our own heroes, have our own plans. Again, if you didn't live through the COVID-1984 nightmare, it's good to have storable food. It's good to be mobile. It's good to have different assets out there in a plan and not just have to bend the knee to the super state and its authoritarian mandates. And like I said, I think we are in a roller coaster ride on the way up to November. Jason, thank you so much for joining us. And guys, thank you for joining me for 2 whole hours, 5 nights a week here at TNT, where the truth lives. Remember this, guy, it is not about left or right. It is always going to be about right and wrong. I absolutely love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow night on the flip side.